Okay, so just to be cheesy, all right, just to be cheesy and to quote the song, I really do believe Christmas is the most wonderful time of the year. I do, okay, and I'm not just saying that because here's why. I objectively, like, sat down and surveyed all of the holidays, and I was like, all right, is it really the best? Okay, is it the best holiday? You know, because July 4th, that makes the list, in my opinion, because you got barbecue, you got fireworks, and you just have America, all right? And Thanksgiving makes the list because you just eat and watch football all day. That's a great thing. Valentine's Day is stupid. That does not make the list at all. It's just dumb. All the ladies are like, why? No. Columbus Day, we get a day off of school for it. I don't know why, but that makes the list. I don't like we celebrate Columbus. Thank you, Columbus. So I as I'm sitting, like as chestnuts are roasting on an open fire in the background, and like 99.9 is on the radio, and Home Alone's on TV, and like I'm just like, dude, it's not even close. It's not even a contest, in my opinion. Is anyone else with you? There's got to be like some holiday rebel out there that's like, dude, St. Patty's Day is like the best. Like that's weird. All right, like why? So I'm sure there's one of you, but Christmas is the best. And there's nothing wrong with some Christmas nostalgia. Like I think that, I'm not anti-Santa. Like I'm excited for wherever Ben went, little baby Ben, to grow up and believe in a scam and a lie. I think that's going to be fun to play along with that. I think it's going to be awesome. Like I still remember when I got to tag along with my parents when I was of age. By the way, did I just blow it for anyone in here? Sorry, Tavion. Okay. Sorry, man. But you know what the feeling is. Like Christmas Eve, you hear something on the roof. Oh, man, what was that? Was that him? Hey, we better go to bed. Like, that's just fun. You know, you get to eat the cookies that night. You know, it's just a good time. I'm not anti-Santa. I think the Christmas traditions are incredible. Like, just nighttime drives, looking at lights, you know, it's fun. But what tends to happen is that we think that, like, joy and happiness is only found, like, in Christmas. And it's a month. It's like an awesome month. If you're Walmart, it's like 4 months of Christmas, and like we have this incredible time. But all that really happens is it's somewhat of like a mirage, because when we get there, when we finally get to it, it like disappears. Right? Like December 26th is like one of the more depressing days of the year, right? Like 99.9 is just back to where it was before, just dumb. And like the neighborhood lights start dwindling, they start fading away, you start seeing less and less Christmas everywhere, and that's kind of like you get those Christmas blues or whatever it's called. Now, the reason why I say it's some sort of a mirage is because we're too busy looking for joy in the traditions, in the celebrations, in the gifts, in the red Starbucks cups, in all these things. You know, and we as Christians, we do it too. Like, we might know the meaning of Christmas, like, well, even if you're not a Christian, you probably know that, like, Jesus was born on this day. Like, this is his birthday, right? This is his birthday month. He gets one of those. Like, you might know that. But, like, even as Christians, we get this some sort of a joy mirage when it comes in the season. And so we want to know, like, today, and even they're even teaching this in Maine service as well. Like, me and Ryan were basically studying together, and Shane, the junior high pastor, was studying together. We're trying to give somewhat of a same message here. Like, what is actually in the real Christmas story? Like, the real Christmas story is, yeah, there was the baby, there was the nativity scene, there was the manger. But what's also in that, what's, like, around that? Okay, and so if you've got a Bible, would you actually open up to the book of Luke? We're going to be in Luke and Matthew today. We're going to be looking in Luke and Matthew. And so if you go to Luke chapter 1, in order for us to just better understand the full story, we got to do something first. Like, if you're driving down a neighborhood and you see the nativity scene in a front yard, like, you just drive right past it. But there's so much more than the manger. There's so much more than just that nativity scene. Like, There's so much more in the background of that actual event, that situation, that world. There's not a front yard big enough in Gilbert to really house all that is within the nativity scene, within the Christmas story. And so let's actually backtrack. Let's look at what the world was like before he was even born, okay? And so if you're in Luke, in Luke chapter 1, it says this. Actually, hold on, let me get there. Sorry, I should have been prepared. It says this. I'm sorry, actually Luke chapter 2. Luke chapter 2. At that time, why isn't the two big? There it is. Okay, in those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. This was the first census that took place while Quirinius was governor of Syria, and everyone went to their own town to register. So Joseph, you might know the story. Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea to Bethlehem, the town of David, because he belonged to the house in the line of David. You actually had to go where you were, or your family was originally from. You had to go there to that town to register. And he went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child. Okay, so in the very first verse of chapter 2, we see that Rome is in the entire, it's taken over like basically the entire known world. Rome is in charge. Rome is dominating, not just in charge, but beating down. All right, like they're not just like they're not just ruling by like good decisions, good political agendas, and all these things. They're ruling. Why? They got the biggest army. They're all just brutal leaders. They're leading people by terrifying them and scaring them into submission. So basically, the people had no other choice but to be ruled by Rome. For instance, they invented crucifixion. All right, and not just invented it, but they tried to do some experiments with it. All right, and so they would crucify people in different positions just for the fun of it, just to see what would happen to their body, how quickly they could die. And they wouldn't just experiment with one or two people. There's a story of them crucifying 2,000 people just in one city, just setting up 2,000 crosses and doing this. All right, there's another account of a ruler from Rome, just rolling up into a town, and 30 or 40,000 people at one point in time, they wouldn't bow down to a statue of Caesar, and so they said, burn the city. So they burned the whole city. This is Rome at this time. They are absolutely brutal people. Caesar himself demanded that people would call him Lord. Like that was his name. Jesus would eventually hijack a lot of sayings that Caesar would say. Caesar was supposed to be called Lord because his dad, Augustus, was supposedly ascended into heaven, and so they called Caesar, Julius, son of God. They called him son of God. So they said, this is Lord. And if you didn't say that he was Lord, boom, you're done. Okay, so Caesar's got a big head, and this other guy named Herod's got a big head. Herod is like Caesar's little puppet. You guys might know the little backstory of Herod. Herod is a king. All right, go over to Matthew 2. Go to Matthew 2 if you've got your Bible. Herod basically just wants to keep Caesar as happy as possible because Herod is Caesar's little puppet. He wants to keep his throne. Caesar gave Herod a region, and he's like, all right, you are now called King of the Jews, Herod. You are King of the Jews. And Herod was really good at what he did. He was a very, very skilled politician. He knew how to get things done. He basically made the people of the land happy at first. Tried to get on their good side. Here's a stadium. Here's a massive, awesome city and building. And he turned this coast into this incredible state-of-the-art city and called it Caesarea. And it was an incredible port city for trading. He took away a third of the people's taxes because there was a famine. And then he started becoming evil. He started doing some evil, bad things. And whatever Herod did, he did it big, including his family. He had 11 wives and 43 kids. 43 kids. Yeah, that's some drama right there. Like he was jacked up. He made his two sons fight to the death. He basically gave them a weapon and said, defend yourself. And he just sat there and watched. Like, this guy is twisted. He's nuts. He was so concerned that people weren't going to cry at his funeral that in order to ensure that people would cry at his funeral, he invited thousands of people to this place to where his funeral was going to be and made sure that they were killed and slaughtered so there would just be tears at his funeral. This guy's crazy. This guy is nuts. He built a palace for himself, and he installed hot tubs on the roof. He installed cold and hot baths on the roof while the people just below him are starving and are poor. He didn't even care. And he demanded that he was called King of the Jews. And one last thing is, like, you guys think that if you have a job and you get taxed and it's like, man, I want my money back. These people are getting 80 to 90% taxation during this time. So who's got a job in here? Raise your hand real quick. All right, so whatever that was, take a tenth of that, and that's yours. You get to keep it. The rest of it just goes to, you're like, nope, good luck. Joe's Farm Bureau, they're taking care of you, though, aren't they? Yeah, oh, yeah, they are. So imagine just, man, picture this. Ryan used this illustration in Maine. You're a fisherman. You just spend an all-nighter just working hard for your family, getting all of this fish so that you could keep a little bit for yourself, give some to your family, and then you walk down the port, you walk down the dock, and there's a tax collector, and he's got a clipboard, and he's just tapping his foot. He's like, come on, let's go. And he takes almost everything. Like, that's this world that they live in. That's the people at this time, the world that's going on right now in Rome and even under King Herod is, like, just so oppressed. These people are so impoverished and are desperate. And so I say all that just so you know, like, Jesus didn't come on the scene in some Agritopia situation. He didn't just come up to, like, a nice, warm, cozy Gilbert neighborhood. He grew up hearing the stories about when the Romans came and they crucified 2,000 people. He grew up hearing these stories about if you didn't bow down to this Caesar guy, you're getting burned at a stake. He heard about these sorts of stories. These are the neighborhoods that he grew up in. Guys, the Christmas story is a violent one. It's not just some cute little manger scene with, like, three wise men and, like, Santa Claus, like, bowing down to Jesus. It's a violent, messed up, jacked up world. So open up to Matthew 2, and we'll start at the top, verse 1. We're going to kind of walk through the story. And I actually skipped ahead. I skipped the manger scene. We're going to backtrack next week. We're going to talk about something a little bit different today. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem, verse 1, in Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and they asked, hey, where's the one who's been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and we've come to worship him. And when King Herod heard this, he was disturbed. He's like, wait, what? All of Jerusalem was with him. When he had called together all of the people's chief priests and the teachers of the law, he asked them, hey, where's this Messiah to be born? In Bethlehem, in Judea, they replied, for this is what the prophet's written. Verse 6, it says, but you, Bethlehem, this is from the book of Micah, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. This is foretelling of Jesus. Verse 7, then Herod came, called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time that the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, hey, go, search carefully for a child. Hey, as soon as you find him, report to me so, you know, I can go and I can worship him. So what just happened here is that, I don't know, like, what Herod's doing. Maybe he's, like, on his balcony. He's enjoying his nice little stupid bubble bath, you know, and like, these servants are, like, making him sushi from this fish that they just stole from this poor fisherman. And he's up there, man. He's being fed grapes. He's enjoying a good time. And he gets a knock on the door. And these Magi come on the scene. Magi is basically an astrologer, what we would know today, and they say, hey, have you seen this King of the Jews? Apparently a child's been born. We're looking for him. And I wish that Matthew would have entered this, like, some sort of a scratched record player soundbite, because I imagine there would be one where Herod would be like, wait, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, we're looking for the King of the Jews. He's like, yeah, that's me. I was born, like, 30 years ago. So, hey, wise men, you better be super wise with the next words you're about to say. They're like, hey, yeah, no, we know what you're saying, but this guy is the Christ. This baby is the Christ. He is the King of the Jews that Michael was talking about back in the day. And we're looking for him. So Herod is mad. Like, it's kind of hard to relate to this, but basically, they just insulted him. They just said, "Yeah, you're king of the Jews, man. Like, this is the real deal." And so at first, I'm sure his reaction was like, "I'm gonna freaking kill this kid. All right, hey, just let me know where he's at. I want to bring him dinner. I want to bring the family. And I want to stop by. I'm gonna bring him dinner. I'm gonna bring him a gun. I'm just gonna kind of just hang out and just kind of worship him too. So just let me know when you get there." And I don't know. I mean, they were magi. They're obviously some smart, wise men. I'm not sure if they believed him, but I guess they did, because they went and they worshiped Jesus. They brought him those gifts, and then they were about to head back, but they got a dream. They said, "Don't go back." An angel of the Lord says, "Do not go back," because Herod this whole time was duking you. He was gonna kill this kid, and so they don't go back. Now let's pick it up. In verse 13, when they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. They said, "Get up." He said, "Take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. And you stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." And so he got up, he took the child, and he took Mary during the night, and they left for Egypt. It's not like they just took a bus to Egypt. That is a trip. They had to travel to Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. Pick it up in verse 16. It kind of rewinds a little bit. Verse 16, when Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious, and he gave orders to kill every single boy in Bethlehem and all in his vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. How twisted and wicked, how just evil. Thank you. Doing a lot today. How just demonized do you have to be to just not care and to kill a baby? Not just a baby, but every single baby in the town. I mean, I'm looking at my kid right now, and yeah, I got a special attachment to Benjamin. Look at that kid right now. Look, yeah. You're telling me right now that there's some bone in your body that thinks it's okay to just slaughter every kid that's 2 years and under in your age just because you're power hungry? Just because you're scared that this king of the Jews is gonna ruin your throne, is going to jeopardize all that you've worked hard for and everything, and you'll go as far as to kill? Yeah, I don't care. It's like he's done this before or something. And so he demands that every boy is killed in Bethlehem, but Jesus wasn't there, as you obviously know. He was in Egypt. And the story goes on to say that he would eventually come back into land in Nazareth, where he'd spend most of his ministry. Now hop over one more time to chapter 4. Go to chapter 4 of Matthew. Christmas message just doesn't need to be about the manger. We're going to kind of fast forward a little bit and look at a really critical time of Jesus' life. Go to chapter 4, verse 23. We're going to bleed into chapter 5. And Jesus, it says this. Let me just read it. Verse 23. Jesus went throughout Galilee, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness among the people. And news about him spread all over Syria, and people brought to him all who were ill with various diseases, and they were suffering severe pain. The demon-possessed, those having seizures, and the paralyzed, and he just healed them. He healed them all. And large crowds, obviously, from Galilee, the Decapolis, Jerusalem, Judea, and the region across Jordan followed him. And we pick it up here in a very famous passage. Chapter 5, verse 1. Now when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on the mountainside. So he's like, I got to get a better view. There are so many people that Jesus had to go up onto the side of a mountain. And he sat down. And his disciples came to him, and he began to teach them. Now, before I say this, imagine right now, those verses in chapter 4, he's healing the demon-possessed, the people with severe pain, the paralyzed, all these people. Jesus is just healing everyone. Crowds, throngs of people are just following him. Like this incredible new king has come onto the scene, and he's healing everyone. He's got such incredible power and authority. What is this guy going to say? And so Jesus climbs on the top of a mountain, and he's looking over the people, and the crowd starts to die down, like get quieter and quieter and quieter, and they're waiting for what he's going to say. What are the words, the possible words that come out of this king, this ruler's, this teacher's mouth? And he says, blessed are the poor in spirit. Like that's what he says. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst. Blessed are the merciful, who are the pure in heart. I would imagine there are some people in the crowd that go, what? Man, we wanted to hear your military strategy. We wanted to hear how you're going to take down Caesar. I mean, if you're healing a demon-possessed, a paralytic, obviously you could take out Caesar like that. And you tell me, blessed are the poor? Blessed are those who mourn and are tired and are meek? You see, the thing is, Jesus basically was saying, you guys have it all backwards. He's telling everyone in the crowd and throughout his whole life and his teaching, he flipped almost everything culturally and with society upside down. He says, it's all backwards. You got it all wrong. Because the religious people were like, hey, what can I do? And Jesus is saying, you can stop making checklists. That's what you can do. Society was about rank and status and prestige and making it to the top. Jesus found some teenage, smelly, sweaty fishermen to change the world. It wasn't about status or rank with Jesus. The culture was about strength and power and aggression and dominance and authority. And Jesus is about all his pinpointed weakness in his whole ministry. He says that's where power comes from, because God works best when you're weak. Jesus taught meekness. He taught meekness. And do you guys know what meekness is? Ryan mentioned this a couple weeks ago. This is what we do a lot of times. What does meekness rhyme with? Weakness. And it's very different. It's very different. Maybe you can think of the story in Matthew chapter 26 where Jesus is getting arrested, and it's just a crazy scene. Like, I can't imagine how stressful it was, for his disciples. And Peter takes a sword and chops the guy's ear off. And Jesus is going, what are you doing, man? First off, he picks up the guy's ear and puts it back on him. He's like, here you go. Sorry about that. And because Peter's like, man, I got to be strong for this guy. I got to defend Jesus. I got to stand up for Jesus. And eventually Jesus would say, hey, Peter, if I wanted to, I could send out 20,000 angels, but I didn't. And you pick up a little dagger and you chop a guy's ear off. First off, nice shot. You hit his ear, okay? No, that's not what Jesus said, right? It's not what he said at all. He's like, Peter, that's not strength. That's weakness, man. He's like, you knew my plan. I just told you. I just told you as we were walking through the garden what I'm going to do. I'm supposed to be turned over. I'm supposed to die. That's not strength at all. And man, like a lot of us, I feel like, just to apply this practically, a lot of us come out swinging like this guy. A lot of us come out swinging like Peter, because we've been betrayed. We've been gossiped about. We've been wronged. And so we'll respond with what we think is strength, what we think is power, and we'll come back with revenge, or retaliate. And what meekness is it's having strength and you restrain it. It's having strength restrained. Having the strength not to retaliate, having the strength not to impart revenge on someone that is just really done you wrong, who's really hurt you. And this way of Jesus reaches into every single area of our life. Not just the meekness, but the fact that Jesus pinpoints weakness. He doesn't care about rank or status. He could care less about your checklists. This part of Jesus, this way of Jesus, this kingdom that this new king established bleeds into the way you treat your family. It bleeds into the way that you treat your teachers, the substitute teacher. That one hurt. The way we treat our enemies, the way we react not just to blessings but to sufferings. Man, this way of Jesus, this whole ministry of Jesus and this kingdom that he establishes when he's here flips everything upside down. It changes everything. And a lot of times, maybe it's in your life, it's like, man, that's backwards. That's backwards to my reaction. Exactly. And so as we end here, as we wrap up, man, the finding joy in the Christmas season isn't just remembering that Jesus was born, but it was remembering why. Okay? Because the Christmas story isn't just the manger scene. The Christmas story is actually still going on because you're in that. He came down and was born a crying, whiny baby and grew up to be this incredibly powerful king for you. And so the Christmas story hasn't ended. It doesn't end in Matthew chapter 2. So we're invited into that story to be in that. And he came down to set the oppressed, the captives free. Like, we don't have a Caesar right now. Like, this is Gilbert. Joe Johnson's pretty cool. We don't have a Caesar. We don't have a Herod, but there's a guy named Satan. It's called the Prince of the World. And apparently he's got a kingdom set up, a pretty big kingdom, and he is oppressing. He's enslaving. He's trying to kill. And Jesus came to set us free from that. Guys, we're gonna wrap up here right now. We're gonna sing a couple more songs. Because I feel like we should really respond. And I love that we sang, yeah, the band can kind of come up now. I love that we sang a song about the cross right before we just learned about his birth. I love how that worked out. Because like I said, it's one big story. So let's pray, and we're going to keep singing. God, thank you so much that, I don't even know where to start. Just how you came to this earth and why you came to this earth and what you did when you were here on this earth and just the whole Christmas story in general. God, thank you that you've invited us to play a part in that. And in this season of Advent, may we come back in these next couple weeks to come and just further understand, man, what is the meaning, the true meaning of Christmas, and how can we find joy, not just in Christmas, but through it, God. And in your name, we pray, amen. Before we get started, guys, it's Advent. We do a thing called Advent Conspiracy around here, okay? And a lot of you might know what that is, and some of you might not know what that is, but we do something unbelievable here at Mission. We have an opportunity here to really make a difference. And so what we do in the month of December is that we encourage people to spend less so that they can give more. And what's going on at Mission right now is that we're giving you an opportunity to participate. Just the high school can participate in what Maine's doing because they're doing this thing. All right, you decide, I don't need this. I don't need this gift. I don't care, mom or dad, if you give me one less gift this year, whatever money that you would spend, please give it to me. I'm going to give it away. And so there's an opportunity this year. If you make that decision, if you want to participate in that way, and give sacrificially, you can write that down and you can wrap it in a box into a Christmas present. And in these next couple weeks in Advent, we have a bunch of trees that are going to be set up, and we're going to set these gifts underneath these trees. And I love like the symbolism, because Christmas is this, there's a common symbol of gifts under a tree, but we're revamping that. We're redeeming that, and we're saying, yeah, I spent less so I could give more, and that is the greatest gift that I could give this season. And so we're doing that, and also, guys, we're taking up an offering. Here in high school, we don't pass a bucket very often. Today, we're going to pass some stockings. If you've got money, and if you got it on your heart to give, what this is going to do is we're going to give this to people in Malawi because we give them clean drinking water. Do you realize it takes you like 15 seconds to probably reach every accessible clean drinking faucet in your whole home? And there are people who are walking miles to get dirty water. And so what we're doing is we're digging wells for people in Malawi, and every $50 that we raise gives them a brand new well, and for a whole year, or every $50 we raise gives a child clean drinking water for an entire year. So we're going to be passing stockings around, and every dime that we give this month will go towards that. So if it's on your heart, please give. Let's continue to worship.